Jason stands in the Amphistaff Grove, watching. Out of the shadows, out in the blue-white glare of the nursery's constant noon, four slaves suddenly step away from the nearest coral tree basil, letting its fronds drop from their hands. They don't seem to be in pain. This, Jason knows already, is because they're not really slaves. Out in the blue-white noon, the four slaves press the sides of their noses, and the ooglyph maskers they had worn peel apart, filaments unthreading from pores to leave smeared beads of blood like sweat. The maskers ripple and flow down the revealed warriors, then squirm away to vanish in the grass. The warriors walk toward the Amphistaff Grove. The four warriors stop just beyond the fringe of the grove. Juvenile amphistaffs whip the air threateningly, and the polyps' ground mouths gape wide, mutely anticipating a rain of blood and flesh.
Jedi slave, come out from there.
They wear no armor. The only Von Dune crabs within reach are the wild ones that infest the bog beyond the coral tree basil, coming out at night to feed on the polyps at the edges of the grove. Unarmored warriors could not survive even seconds within the hissing swirl of juvenile amphistaffs.
Jedi slave, if we must come in, it will go worse for you.
The warrior turns and barks a command in the tongue of the Yuuzhan Vong. Two more false slaves step away from a coral tree basil and allow their ooglyph maskers to slither down their legs. The newly revealed warriors grab a real slave. One holds him while the other crushes the slave's throat with a knife hand strike. They step back and let the slave fall, watching dispassionately while he writhes in the dirt, choking to death.
Jedi slave, come out, or another will die. Save their lives, Jedi. Come out.
All right, Jason says quietly, a little sadly, if you insist. His still shadow becomes a shade in motion, drifting noiselessly through the grove of blood-hungry polyps. He stops at the penumbra, bordering the blue-white noon beyond. Here I am.
Farther, the warrior commands. Move beyond the reach of the grove.
Jason opens his empty hands.
Make me.
The warrior turns his head fractionally toward his companions.
Kill another.
You, Jason says, are no warrior. The leader's head snaps around as though yanked by a tractor beam.
What? Warriors win battles without murdering the weak.
Jason's voice drips acid contempt.
Like all Yuuzhan Vong, you make war only upon the helpless. You are a coward from a species of cowards.
The warrior lunges, taloned fingers reaching to tear the eyes from Jason's face. With an exhausted sigh, Jason collapses before the warrior's rush, falling to his back, while lightly taking the warrior's outstretched wrists and planting one foot in the pit of the warrior's stomach to make a fulcrum. Jason rolls, kicking upward, and the warrior flails helplessly as he flips through the air into the blade storm of the amphistaffs. Jason lies for a moment, in the sudden rain of Yuuzhan Vong blood and gobbets of warrior flesh. Then he rises. He faces the remaining three.
Well?
The warriors stand their ground, calling out in their own tongue. In answer to their call, two of the squads who guard the Shri Amtis lumber heavily forward bearing amphistaffs of their own, bandoliers of thudbugs and other less familiar weapons, and wearing full Von Dune crab armor. In a part of his mind, far from the pain and the blood and the harsh blue-white glare, Jason can feel the dark satisfaction of the amphistaff polyps behind him as they swiftly, almost instantly, digest the fallen warrior. Amphistaff polyps breed asexually. The amphistaffs themselves become a polyp's offspring, released from their nodules to squirm away in search of the proper ground to take root and begin their transformation into polyps themselves. Through his empathic connection, Jason shows them the ground he recommends. Trusting their friend, the amphistaffs take his advice. He stretches forth his arms. The warriors can only stare in open-mouthed awe as amphistaffs fall like leaves from the polyps at his back. as amphistamps wriggle down the polyp's knobby leathern trunks and slither through the grass. Amphistaffs twine about Jason's ankles and climb his body like vines enveloping a forgotten jungle idol. They twist around his legs, his hips, his chest, coiling the length of his arms, shrouding his neck, curving up to embrace even his skull. Jason brings his hands together before him and offers the warriors a solemn bow. When he parts his hands again, a mature amphistaff stretches between them, blade and spike, fully envenomed, as is every one of the 17 amphistaffs that make up his armor. Jason says, "I'd like you all to meet some friends of mine." Nomanor hurled his sackworm across the chamber.
Executor, let me go to him.
Absolutely not. I can't have you running around in the middle of the Tizopil Yunchilat, you foolish creature. Don't you remember that our solo project is secret? How secret will it be after you run through the nursery trying to save his useless skin?
Hardly useless, Executor. As I said before, his education has proceeded very well indeed. Though I admit it could be going better right now.
Could be better?
Nomanor flicked his wrist at the viewspider's optical sack, where the dim silhouette of Jason Solo armed himself.
He has learned nothing. He cannot possibly win such a battle. How can he expect to fight two squads?
Winning, Vergere said, her crest fanning a solemn blaster bore gray, is not the same as fighting. Watch. The shadow suddenly vanished, and the image within the optical sack shifted and flickered liquidly as the view spider sought new visual sources.
What's happening? Nomanor demanded uselessly. Does he flee? Is he running away like the broken Jedi brat he has always been?
Vergere spoke without the faintest hint of irony.
I tell you this, though neither he nor they yet know it, he is the greatest of all the Jedi. Jason Solo is the living Jedi dream. Even without the Force, he is more dangerous than you can possibly imagine. You must let me go to him. He must be stopped.
Stopped from what? Soiling his robe skin as he runs away?
Stopped from destroying the Tizopil Yunchilat. Stopped very likely from destroying the seed ship itself.
Nomanor's mouth came open, but from it came only a fading hiss.
Don't you understand, Executor? He isn't running away.
She gestured at the viewspider's sack, where it had recovered enough image to show a lone shape sprinting headlong to meet the oncoming thunderclouds of warrior squads.
Vergere said, "He's attacking."
Jason Solo sprints into battle. As he runs, he makes an image in his mind. The amphistaff he carries matches itself to this image, coiling more than half its length around his forearm. An internal pulse from its linked chain of power glands generates an energy field that rigidifies its semi-crystalline cell structure, locking it in that form. A meter of it extends from his right fist, tipped with a double handspan blade. The same field that rigidifies the amphistaff extends a fractional millimeter beyond the blade, giving it an edge no thicker than an atomic diameter. So it is that when one of the unarmed warriors springs to bar Jason's path, hands wide to grapple, the blade passes with only a whisper of resistance through flesh and bone. One arm spirals lazily through the air, showering droplets of blood. One leg topples sideways, twitching in the grass. Jason does not even break stride. Thudbugs hum through the air around him, but the eye spots of the amphistaffs wrapped around Jason's body are infrared and motion sensitive. He is able to integrate their empathic reactions into a full surround field of perception that is not dissimilar to the Force itself. And he has trained for years to avoid weapons that he can only barely perceive. Dozens more Thudbugs curve toward him, homing like concussion missiles as he sprints straight at the oncoming squads of heavily armed warriors. The nearest warrior thrusts his amphistaff at Jason like a force pike. Jason dives beneath its point, rolling forward on his shoulder, stabbing upward. His blade enters the warrior's body at the joining of pelvis and thigh. A multiple blast bug detonation slaps the warrior forward, and Jason's blade shears through spine and armor alike to burst from the warrior's back in a fountain of gore, and slices as well through the warrior's blast bug bandolier. As Jason rolls backward with the concussion and kicks free of the shuddering corpse, he grabs the severed bandolier. An instant later, he is up again, running, staggering, stumbling, deafened and half-stunned by the explosions. The bandolier is bleeding from its severed ends, dying. Its sole wish is to release its children, the blast bugs locked in its linked belt of hexagonal germination chambers, so that they might fulfill their explosive destiny. Jason can keenly feel its desire. In the emotional language of his empathic talent, he promises the ultimate satisfaction of this desire, if the bandolier will only wait for his signal. Ahead, the remaining two squads draw themselves into a tight wedge, its point toward Jason, its broad base covering the back-to-tank-sized tub that holds the Shri Yantees. As more blast bugs hum toward him from all directions, Jason heaves the bandolier overhand like a proton grenade. It twists lazily, high through the stark noon. With his empathic talent, he projects a pulse hammer thrill of anticipation, teetering over the brink to fulfillment, a shuddering surge of adrenaline that would roughly translate as now. The bandolier flares into a star shell over the base of the wedge, at the same time as the blast bugs, targeted on Jason, arrive in a thundering swarm, striking him and the ground and the warriors nearby indiscriminately. Concussion bursts, battering them all helplessly this way and that, ending with Jason finally blown off his feet into a high-spinning arc through the air. The blood-tinged darkness swallows him before he hits the ground.
There. You see?
Nomanor nodded contemptuously toward the suddenly vivid image in the view spider's optical sac, showing Jason lying unconscious, bleeding on the blast-shredded nursery turf, still within his improvised armor of amphistaffs. You see, but you do not see. Now in the image sac, two crab-armored warriors staggered into view, scorched, bleeding from multiple wounds. One passed too close to Jason's back, and one of the amphistaffs, braided around the human's torso, lashed out convulsively, spearing the warrior through the side of the knee. The other warrior kept running headlong, fleeing without a backward glance, and Nomanor soon discovered what the warrior fled from. A limping, snarling, shouting mob, bearing a variety of improvised weapons, from spade rays to maladillos to writhing wild amphistaffs, as much a danger to their wielder as to an enemy, which descended upon the hamstrung warrior to beat and chop him to death with savage triumph.
Those are slaves, Nomanor breathed.
The warriors were never his target, Vergere said, as though offering a hint to a puzzled child. Finally, belatedly, he understood. The ball of ice inside his stomach sent freezing waves out to his fingertips.
He has killed the Shri Yantees.
The Tizo Pil Yunchilat dissolved in slaughter. Each Duryam, severed from its telepathic links by the Shri Yantees, had been forced to wait, blind and deaf, sizzling in a rolling boil of stress hormones, burning with the desperate hope that the next sensation it would feel might be the awakening of sense and power and the pure, clean knowledge that it alone had been chosen the Pashkik Yuzhantar Altirna, the world brain of God's Kresh. And so, when the Thudbug bandolier had burst, sending dozens of the explosive creatures rocketing into the tank that held the Shriamtees, where the fluid bath that supported and nourished the Shriamtees had multiplied their concussive force, sending an immense gout of fluid and blood and shredded flesh reaching for the fusion spark that was the nursery sun. All but one of the Duryams could not begin to guess what was going on. The one Duryam that knew what was going on was not shocked, or stunned, or panicked. It was simply desperate and ruthless. It had made a deal with Jason Solo. When the telepathic interference from the Shriamtees had suddenly vanished, the Duryam not only knew exactly what had happened, it knew who had done it and why. And it knew what to do next. While echoes of the Thudbug Bandolier still rang within the nursery, the Duryam sent its slaves scrambling away from the coral tree basils, scattering toward a number of Ooglith hummocks. These Ooglits had been coaxed to conceal stacks of crude improvised weapons. The Ooglits had also concealed a number of sackworms, filled to bursting with spark bee honey. Spark bees were the wild baseline from which Thudbugs had been shaped, uncounted years ago. By swinging a spade ray like a catapult, a slave might hurl one of these sackworms a considerable distance. The sackworms burst on impact, spraying gelatinous honey in every direction. The enzyme-activated spark bee honey clung to whatever it struck. On contact with the nursery's air, it burst into flame. In seconds, fire was everywhere. Warriors, roasting to death within their useless armor, were unable to protect themselves, and even less able to defend the shapers they had escorted. And all but one of the Duryams shared a single thought: to gather to itself the slaves who were its eyes and hands. They had to pack their slaves onto the Hive Island, to surround themselves with walls of flesh. None of them had any other hope of self-defense. Except for one. And so when all the slaves belonging to all the other Duryams sprinted from throughout the nursery, whipped onward by the coral seed web savaging their nerves, converging upon the hive lake to drown the double ring of warrior guards in waves of shuddering, clutching, bleeding bodies, the slaves belonging to one particular Duryam did not. Instead, they fanned out in teams of five. One team clustered around Jason Solo and waited while he dragged himself brokenly to his feet. The other teams raced through the smoke and flames, skipping over corpses and slipping on spilled blood, until they reached the coral tree basils. In seconds, the coral tree basils became towering columns of flame, fueled by spark bee honey. Gnome Anor stared at the universe of bloody carnage within the view spider's sack with numb, uncomprehending horror.
Executor, we're running out of time.
Time? What time? This disaster. We are dead, don't you understand? Sabang La will slaughter us.
Ever the optimist, Vergier chirped. You assume we'll live out the hour.
Gnome Anor glared at her speechlessly. Vergier opened a hand at the view spider's optical sack.
Do you think he's finished, Gnome Anor? Does our avatar of the twin seek only confusion and slaughter? Or does he produce confusion and slaughter as a diversion?
Diversion? To accomplish what?
Then his good eye bulged wide. In the view spider's image sack, he saw Jason and the five slaves who accompanied him wade into the chest-deep murk of the hive lake, hacking their way through the churning, struggling, bleeding tangle of slaves and warriors. Gnome Anor breathed.
The Duryams.
They are the brains of the ship, Executor. He has already shredded the Teasel Pil Yunchilat, and he cannot hope to escape. What other target is worthy of his life?
Without a world brain to direct the separation and atmospheric insertion, the whole ship could be destroyed. He'll kill himself along with everyone else.
Gnome Anor's stomach roiled until he tasted blood.
He couldn't. I mean, could he? Would he?
Ah, Executor, what a happy place the universe would be if all our questions were so easily answered, she chimed, opening her hands toward the viewspider's image sack. It showed Jason Solo on the Hive Island shore, driving one of his blades through the chest of a maddened shaper, while with the other, he opened what might have been either a slave or a masked warrior from collarbone to groin. Two of his escorts survived. They had turned just at the waterline, where their blurring swipes of spade rays could not quite hold back a mob of suicidally fierce slaves. The two gave ground, forced backward up the beach, while Jason scrambled up onto the nearest of the huge duryam chambers of calcified coral. He paused there, hesitating, standing atop the waxy hexagonal plug that sealed the birth chamber's end, his amphistaffs raised, again swaying as though he might faint. Then he drove his twin amphistaff blades downward through the plug. Nomenor covered his face with his hands.
Go, he said, his voice weak, muffled. Kill him if you must. Save the ship.
He heard the hatch open, then close again, and instantly he dropped his hands. In his eyes shone the clear light of simple calculation. He stroked the villop, snapped orders, then let it fall. When he opened the hatch sphincter, a swift glance assured him the tubeway was empty. Executor Nomenor ran for his coral craft as though pursued by crate dragons. He had not survived so much of this war by underestimating Jedi, particularly the Solo family. Killing duryams got easier after the first one. Standing on the plug that sealed the mouth of the duryam's hexagonal birth chamber, the wax warm under his feet, almost alive, he felt the searing terror of the infant duryam trapped beneath him, smothering in panic claustrophobia, nowhere to run, no hope to hide, screaming telepathically, begging bitterly, desperately. He raised his twin amphistaffs over his head, then sank to one knee to drive them downward through the wax plug. He felt the blades enter the flesh of the infant duryam below, as though they sliced through his own belly. He felt the caustic snarl of venom spreading into the duryam's body, as though it coursed his own veins. He yanked the amphistaffs free and scrambled for the next birth chamber. He raised his last amphistaff like a battle flag. Before he could plant it down through the blood-smeared plug beneath his torn and cut bare feet, a supernova flared inside his brain and burned down the universe. There was nothing left. Nothing but white, hungry white, eating everything he was. Beneath this hexagonal lid was the source, the wellspring, the fountain of white. He could feel it down there, squirming alien tentacles bathed in slime and terror. He could cut off the agony. One stroke more would end it for everyone. Forever. He lifted his amphistaff. Jason, no! Don't do it! He whirled, staggering, white blind and gasping. The voice had been his brother's. Anakin, you can't kill this one, Jason. Anakin's voice said from beyond the white, "This one's your friend." Like a finger flick against a beaker of supersaturated solution, Anakin's voice triggered a phase change in Jason's head. The white clouded, condensed, became crystalline, translucent, transparent, invisible. He could see again, clearly, perfectly. He saw the scarlet rags of meat that were the remains of three shapers caught before they could reach a breath vein on the far side of the nursery beyond the sun. He saw the smoking ring of charred coral tree basils around the hive lake. He saw the rivulets of blood trailing down his arms to drip from his knuckles. And he saw Vergère. Panting harshly, he watched her scramble up the last few meters of the duryam hive. "It was you," Jason rasped. Vergère looked up. She stopped, well away out of amphistaff range. I heard him, he panted. His breath became hot and painful. Anakin told me to stop, but it wasn't Anakin. It was you.
Jason, in the story of your life, is this your best ending?
He raised the amphistaff, but before he could bring it down, Vergere sprang forward into his way. To kill the Duryam, he'd have to spear through her. He hesitated for an eye blink, and in that instant, she reached up and caressed his cheek, just as she had the very first time her touch had drawn him down, out of the embrace of pain's blank white agony. Her palm was wet. What? But he said no more, because his mouth had stopped working. He had just enough time to think. Her tears. Vergere's tears. Before the paralytic contact poison they had become overwhelmed his brain. And the nursery, the Duryam, and Vergere herself all faded as he fell into a different personal universe. Infinite and eternal. This one was black. There was a world that had once been the capital of the galaxy. It had been called Coruscant, and was a planet of a single global city, kilometers deep from pole to pole. It had been a cold world with four moons, far from its blue-white sun, orbited by mirrored platforms that focused the light of the distant sun to prevent the world from freezing. Things had changed. Closer now to its sun, warm, tropical. Its kilometers deep global city, now kilometers deep global rubble, with new seas forming where once there had been apartment towers and government offices. Three moons now wove an orbital ring into a rainbow bridge in the sky. And above this world that had been a capital, this capital that had been a world, a shooting star flared. An immense globe of Yorick coral entered the atmosphere at a steep angle, shedding a planet-wide meteorite shower of bits and pieces and chunks of itself, and blossomed with fire as they streaked to the surface. Where they struck, they rooted and began to grow. The planet had ceased to be Coruscant. It had become Yuuzhan Tar. But soon it would be, once again, the capital of the galaxy. Thousands of years passed before Jason opened his eyes. He lay on something soft, rounded, insanely comfortable, like an acceleration couch upholstered in living scarlet moss that smelled of flowers and ripe fruit. Insects buzzed nearby, invisible, screened by gently waving ferns twice Jason's height. Through these ferns wove vines like garlands of flowers, blooming with brilliant yellow and blue and vivid orange in fantastic and delicate array. The far distance echoed with a long, mournful pack hunter's howl. He was on Yuuzhan Tar. He sat up and had to stifle a groan. He was sore, bruised from head to foot, and though his ribs had been expertly bound, moving gave him a stabbing pain in his side that slowly, agonizingly slowly, faded to a dull ache that throbbed all the way up into his neck. After a couple of seconds, he stood up. Beyond the ferns that had screened his bower, he found a short cliff stretching up two or three times his height, thickly carpeted with variegated mosses. Even cracked and stained with juices of unfamiliar plants, he could not mistake this stuff. This was what his whole world had been built from. Duracrete. This wasn't a cliff. It was a wall. He followed the wall a few meters to his left, where he saw clear sky through another screen of ferns. He parted the ferns, stepped through, and found an alien world spread beneath him. He stood on a ledge, one stride from a sheer drop that plunged more than a kilometer to a dazzlingly multicolored jungle of ferns similar to the ones that screened his bower. Flying creatures flitted from point to point far below him, hunting just above the forest canopy, too distant for his eyes, unaccustomed to such vast spaces, to make out their details. He happened to glance upward and forgot everything else, because that was his first sight of the bridge. From a razor-sharp, needle-pointed arc above the distant horizon, a mind-bending river of color swelled overhead. Following it, Jason craned his neck back and back and back. A titanic spectrum, cascades of azure and incarnadine, of argent and viridian, braided into an impossibly complex, impossibly vivid rainbow that filled a third of the sky before narrowing again to another knife-edged curve that vanished into the purple sky above the opposite horizon. Magnificent, isn't it? Vergier's voice came from just behind his shoulder, though he hadn't heard her approach. He was too lost in wonder and new comprehension to be startled. You know, Jason murmured, still gazing up into the sky, that's exactly what you said when you brought me into the nursery. Those same words, just like that. She briefly told him how the Shapers had been forced to give the Duryam immediate control of the seed ship, and how it had begun the breakup into individual ship seeds so quickly that there had been no time to round up the rampaging slaves. The Duryam itself had used their slave seeds to herd them to safety, fulfilling its side of the bargain it had made with Jason. Yes, hundreds died in the battle, but thousands of slaves were able to ride the ship seeds to the surface. Slaves who were to have been executed at the climax of the Teasel Pilyunchilat. You were magnificent, Jason Solo. A true hero. I don't feel much like a hero. No? How does a hero feel? You don't understand. In the nursery, once I started killing, he said softly, I didn't want to stop. That must be, I can only think that's how the dark side must feel. I didn't ever want to stop. But you did. Only because you stopped me. Who's stopping you now? He stared at her. I don't want to kill you, Vergier. I don't want to kill anybody. Just the opposite. I'm grateful. You saved me. I was out of control. You were not, she said sharply. Don't make excuses. What? Out of control is just code for I don't want to admit I'm the kind of being who would do such things. It's a lie. He offered her half a smile. Everything I tell you is a lie. She accepted his mockery with an expressionless nod. But everything you tell yourself should be the truth, or as close to it as you can come. You did what you did because you are who you are. Self-control, or its lack, had nothing to do with it. Self-control has everything to do with it. That's what being a Jedi is. You, she said, are not a Jedi. Being a Jedi isn't just about using the Force, he said. It's a commitment to a certain way of doing things, a certain way of looking at things. It's about valuing life, not destroying it. So is gardening. He hung his head, numb with memory. Look around you, she said. Look at this world, at the patterns of the fern forest, at the rugged curves of terrain, the braided colors of the rings overhead. It is very beautiful, yes? The sick dread that had curdled in his stomach when he found Duracrete beneath the moss slammed back into him. Where are we? Yuuzhan'tar, she said. Did you not understand this? No, I mean, what world was this before? She sighed. You see, but you do not see. You know, but you do not let yourself know. Look, and your question is answered. He frowned at the fern forest below, where mountain shadows stretched away from the setting sun. Those flying creatures were out in greater force now, in the twilight, and they circled higher and higher through the shadows, as though in pursuit of nocturnal insects. Then one swooped straight up in front of Jason and soared above into the darkening sky. And he could no longer ignore what they were. Hawkbats. He said, "Oh." Those strange metric designs on the distant mountains. He knew what they were now. And the impossibly complex topography of the jungle. That made sense, too. Jason said, fainter now, "Oh. Oh, no." The designs were viewports. The mountains were buildings. What Jason looked upon here was the shape of a single planet-wide city, shattered into ruins, buried beneath a jungle. And all he could say was, "Oh." Long after Yuuzhan Tar had turned this face away from its sun, Jason sat on the mossy ledge above the jungle, now shrouded in night. Flashes of bioluminescence chased each other through the shadowed canopy in jagged streaks of blue-green and vivid yellow. The bridge was impossibly bright, impossibly close, as though he could reach up, grab on, and swing from one of its braided cascades of color. This was the most beautiful place Jason had ever seen. He hated it. He hated every bit of it. Even closing his eyes didn't help, because just knowing it was out there made him shiver with rage. He wanted to burn the whole planet. Brooding, he sat through the long, slow roll of the night. Some unknown time later, by the wheel of the stars, constellations still mockingly familiar over this bitterly foreign landscape, many hours had passed unmarked. He asked, "What now?" Verger answered him from the darkness within a bower of ferns. Though no words had been exchanged between them since twilight, her voice was clear, chiming, fresh as always. "I have been wondering the same." "No games, Verger. Not anymore." "Is what has happened such a mystery to you?" "I'm not an idiot. You're training me." He made an irritated gesture, a flick of the wrist as though tossing away something nasty. "I just don't know what you're training me to do." "You are free to do or not do what you will. Do you understand the difference between training and teaching? Between learning to do and learning to be? Why can't you just explain what you're trying to teach me?" "Is it what the teacher teaches?" The darkness itself seemed to smile. "Or what the student learns?" He nodded slowly, more to himself than to her. "How long before the Yuuzhan Vong arrive?" "Look around you. They are already here." "I mean, how long before something happens? How long can we stay here?" "That depends." A soft chuckle came from the darkness. "Here, look at this." Out from the shadows flew a pale, irregular object, half the size of Jason's fist. It curved through a slow arc, gently tossed. Jason caught it instinctively. In the clear light reflected by the bridge, he found the object to be rough-textured and lumpy, like a rounded hunk of limestone. It was a slave seed, a mature slave seed, his slave seed. "You cut it out of me. While you slept. You were unconscious for quite a while." Verger moved slowly out of the shadows and crouched at his side. "Are you all right?"
I'm... Jason shook his head blankly. "I mean, thank you, I guess." He got up.
He parted the ferns, moving back into the night shadow beneath them, and found his way to the moss-covered wall. 3 paces from the corner, his scraping fingers revealed a vertical crack, straight as a laser, bordered with metal strips. Beyond the crack, the wall became durasteel instead. Jason felt around on the wall at about waist height until his fingers closed on a manual release. He turned it, pushed, and the durasteel door slid aside with an exhausted groan.
"What are you doing?"
Jason didn't answer.
Beyond lay a hallway that smelled of mildew, dimly lit by bulbous growths of phosphorescent lichen, its floor patched with ratty, insect-eaten carpeting. It had been years since he had prowled the lower levels with Jaina and Loey, Tanel Ka and Zek, but the smell was unmistakable. At the far end of the hall, an open arch led to emergency stairs. Halfway down the first flight, he paused, sighing. You coming or what?
Of course.
Vergère appeared at the stairtop behind him, smiling broadly in the bridge light. I was only waiting for you to ask.
This is Jason Solo.
The Master Shaper, Chigang Hul, stared in open horror at the image in the dwarf view spider's sack of optical jelly.
This is the Jason Solo of Duro? The slayer of the Voxin Queen? The Jedi sought by Tsavang La?
It is.
And this is the same Jedi who sparked the slave revolt that came within a Krista destroying the seed ship? The slave revolt that killed hundreds of our holy caste. The slave revolt that spat vicious infidel scum across my pristine planet.
Your planet, Master Shaper.
The shaping of this world is my honor and my task, Chigang Hul snarled. Until that work is done, every living thing in this stellar system answers to my will. Even the fleet. Even the world brain. If I choose to call this planet mine, who dares argue? Who? You?
Oh, not I.
How did he come to be here? How has he survived? It has been weeks since Seedfall. This dangerous Jedi has been running loose all this time. Where has he been? Why have I not been informed?
On the far side of the dwarf view spider, Executor Noma Noor brandished his imperturbable needle-toothed smile.
The War Master orders that you bend all available resources toward his apprehension.
Orders, does he?
Chigang Hul's headdress bristled aggressively.
Until he comes to take possession of this world, I am the ultimate authority here. We'll see about his orders.
Call it a suggestion, if you like.
Noma Noor leaned forward, opening his hands, the perfect image of friendly reasonability.
Nonetheless, you are, as you say, responsible for the shaping of Yuuzhan'tar. How you meet this clear and immediate threat is, of course, entirely up to you.
Chigang Hul scowled.
Where is he? You know, don't you?
Of course.
Again, Noma Noor displayed his needle-pointed smile.
I was only waiting for you to ask.
There was something wrong about this crater. Jason swallowed.
I have a bad feeling about this. And well you should.
Vergère hopped back to him and settled on the lichen beside him.
No place on this planet is more dangerous.
Something about the Vong life down in the crater bothered him. He wasn't sure what it was, couldn't be sure. Even after weeks in the nursery and weeks more on Yuuzhan'tar, he was far from an expert. He'd avoided contact with the Vong life whenever possible. Much of it had unpleasant properties. The tea-smelling purple sap that had bled from the Duracrete moss, for example, had turned his hands into masses of blistered welts for 3 days. He and Vergère had seen the Yuuzhan Vong now and again, and not only shapers tending their new planet. Warriors patrolled even the mid-levels, armed, shivering with disgust at the machines through which they were forced to march. For a time, Jason had wondered if they might be searching for him personally, but as their trek lengthened, they began to come across signs that he wasn't the only fugitive lurking in the deep shadows below the zone of destruction. Fresh tracks in the dust,
caches of food recently picked over, wreckage cunningly arranged to look random while it concealed hiding places within. Across his back, he wore a sizable knapsack, plated from strips torn from the robeskin. The strips had healed in place, making a living pack that never broke or wore out. In it, Jason carried a few useful items they'd scrounged. A glow rod, a pair of electro binoculars, a handful of power cells, and his prize, an MDS personal datapad. Though it was ancient, a 500 series, hopelessly obsolete, and most of what it was loaded with seemed to be instructional games, simplified image generators, and other kid stuff, there was one useful program, an interactive holo map of Coruscant. All right, I give up. What is it about this place? What makes it so dangerous? Vergère touched his arm and, with a gesture, directed his attention toward a thicket of what looked like coniferous shrubs. On the slope around the thicket, a small herd of agile-hoofed, reptile-like creatures sprang from rock to rock, cropping nervously at the sparse moss. An instant later, he found out what had been making them so nervous. A massive bipedal tentacle-faced predator lunged out of the shrub thicket with astonishing speed. It seized the nearest of the hoofed reptilians in powerful prehensile forepaws, its blade-tipped mouth tentacles stabbing and sawing to swiftly slay and disjoint the captured animal, carving it into bite-sized hunks. As the rest of the herd bounded away, the predator settled down in the slanting sunlight to devour its kill. That is why this place is so dangerous, Vergère said, with a hint of a challenging smile. It is filled with what you would call the dark side. I should say, the dark side is very, very powerful here, more powerful than anywhere else on this planet. As powerful, perhaps, as it is anywhere in the galaxy. That's not the dark side, Jason said. A predator hunts to feed itself and its family. That's just nature. And the dark side isn't? I thought the danger of the dark side was that it is natural. That's why it's easier than the light, yes? Well, yes, but... Is what you have seen not the exemplar of the dark side? Is this not what you fear so much? Aggression, violence, passion. You want to know what the real dark side would look like? If that predator had slaughtered the entire herd, just for the fun of it, for the joy of killing. Do you think this predator takes no joy in its successful kill? Jason watched for a moment as the predator seemed to shiver with delight in its meal. Jason's answer was interrupted by a shattering thunderburst that sounded like the whole sky had exploded. What was that? Vergère pointed into the limitless purple above the arch of the bridge.
There.
Yorick coral vessels, the size of the Millennium Falcon, whipped through broad looping arcs around the crater, tracing an impossibly complex rosette. And all of them spat bulbous objects like seed pods, colored the same purple as the sky, in a continuous stream. Now the shell of one seed pod began to peel back, like an Athorian star flower opening toward the sun, revealing tangled wads of white filaments like silkweed. The silk unraveled swiftly, releasing its seeds to the wind, trailing long, long streamers of white fibers. It was a Yuuzhan Vong warrior. The white silk strands trailing above it snapped open into a parachute canopy. Soon all the seed pods had blossomed, dropping a round dozen warriors apiece. Hundreds, thousands. Great. We've stumbled into their airborne infantry training camp. Could have been worse, huh? Could have been an artillery range.
Jason.
There was a hard, cold darkness in Vergère's voice that he'd never heard before. She said,
"This is no training exercise. They are hunting for you."
"All this?" he murmured. "All this just for me?"
"You now get the first hint of how important you are."
He met her gaze steadily. "Well, somebody thinks so anyway. Any suggestions?" Vergère nodded, turning away to gaze once more upward.
"There seems to be an updraft from the crater. Perhaps something to do with the strange storm. It's blowing the pod troopers outward, toward the rim of the crater and beyond.
So?
So, if you are to escape them, there is only one way you can go.
She unfurled a hand toward the interior of the crater.
Down.
Lightning blazed overhead, and thunder slammed the crater floor hard enough to shake the ground. The Yuuzhan Vong were coming. Whole squads of warriors had come bounding over the crater's rim before Jason and Vergere had made it even halfway down the inner slope. Worst of all was that he could feel the Yuuzhan Vong closing in. The center of his chest was hollow, an empty space where the slave seed once had been. If he changed his breathing, if he closed his eyes, if he thought about that hollow, directed his attention into the emptiness at his center, somehow that brought another sense to life. He couldn't have described the feeling. There were no words exactly for how it felt. The slave seed had sent fibers throughout his body, had woven itself into his nervous system until those fibers were an inextricable part of who he was. But those fibers vibrated to a life foreign to this galaxy. He could feel the Yuuzhan Vong swarming down the crater slopes, could feel them slogging through the thunderstorm in the crater's center. He felt the sizzle of alien stress hormones coursing alien veins. He felt one shortness of breath as a warrior slipped around a blind corner that might hide a fugitive Jedi. He felt one's black rage at the death of comrades in the nursery, and his heart echoed with another savage lust for vengeance. He felt them all. Like he was all of them, and all of them were him, at the same time. He felt a fierce rise of predatory joy as a warrior raised his amphistaff and crept toward a small white-robed human shivering in a corner at the meeting of two broken walls. And only when a tall shadow loomed through the curtain of rain right in front of him did Jason realize that the small white-robed human who was about to die was himself. Lightning blasted overhead as he twisted, and the amphistaff blade only scored his ribs before stabbing deep into the durocrete of the wall at his back. Jason swung his knapsack two-handed and slammed 15 kilos of cans and equipment into the warrior's face. The warrior snarled and swung his knotted fists. Jason flicked the first punch aside. The second, he parried with an open palm as he stepped forward, swinging his own doubled arm so that the warrior's knuckles slammed into the point of Jason's oncoming elbow. The warrior howled as his knuckles shattered.
I can do this all day.
He could. The warrior might as well have been a part of Jason's own body. He let himself go, moving light and easy, counters to every attack as clear and obvious and predictable as a form he'd done 1,000 times. Like training with Jaina, when their force talents and their twin bond had made them practically one person. More warriors sighted the fight, the dance, and thud bugs snapped through the air. And Jason actually felt he should apologize as he gracefully faked the warrior off balance and then took his outstretched arm and spun him into their path. The thud bugs hit him like hammers. Von Doom crab armor saved his life, but transferred enough hydrostatic shock to snuff his consciousness like a switched-off glow rod. Jason felt that too, an eye flash of blackout that staggered him. When his eyes cleared, three warriors had him boxed. Knowing how they would attack wouldn't help. No one alive could move fast enough to dodge. The warrior slashed at him, amphistaffs lengthening with whip-crack speed. None of the blades even grazed him. To the nerve nodes that served as all three amphistaffs' primitive brains, Jason suddenly appeared to be a small, disturbingly misshapen, but still unmistakable amphistaff polyp. Uncounted millennia of natural selection had hardwired amphistaffs against cutting polyps. Jason took three running steps for momentum toward the one on the left and sprang into the air. The warrior's instinctive reaction to lift his amphistaff and spear Jason through the guts did him no good at all, because the amphistaff dropped limp between his hands, and the warrior could only gape in astonishment as Jason slammed both feet into his chest and flattened him as if he'd been hit by a speeder. Jason hit the ground running and never looked back. They came after him like hungry rancors, snarling fury. This, he said to himself, would be a really good time for Vergère to show up. As if summoned by his thought, an invisible hand shoved his shoulder, knocking his headlong dash into a diagonal stagger. Before he could recover his balance, an invisible rope hobbled his ankles and brought him crashing to the ground, which collapsed under him with a dull rip of rotten fiber tile and dumped him headfirst 4 meters down to a damp stone floor that he hit like a cargo sack. A section of wall slid aside, revealing another room beyond, dimly lit by glow globes in conservation mode. The light from the far room haloed a small, slim, avian silhouette in the doorway.
Vergère?
Yes.
Slowly, he pulled himself up. No bone seemed to be broken, but his whole body ached. You couldn't have just maybe said, "Hey, Jason, run this way."
Her head canted a centimeter, and her crest seemed to glow a deep burnt orange. She extended a hand toward him. "Hey, Jason," she said, "run this way."
After one last glance through the hole above at the black lightning-lashed clouds, he did. Deep into the planet, deep into the darkness, running. Sweat burned in Jason's eyes, blurring Vergère's back. She streaked ahead, turning corners, ducking through doorways, diving down stairwells, leaping into abandoned turbo lifts to slide the guardrails, and he followed desperately, deeper into the planet, deeper into the darkness, running. That calm open hollow at his center evaporated somewhere along the way. He didn't feel the Yuuzhan Vong anymore. Gasping, losing Vergère and catching sight of her again, his sprint dipping into a stagger, he couldn't know if the Yuuzhan Vong were gaining, falling behind, circling ahead. His imagination crowded the corridors at his back with fierce sprinting warriors, but to look behind, risk losing Vergère forever. Daggers of fire stabbed into his lungs with every step. Ragged black blots danced in his vision, growing, blending, twisting until they suddenly billowed and swallowed him whole. Deep in the darkness. He awoke on the floor. Warm rain trickled down his cheeks as he sat up. Vergère crouched nearby, half-shadowed in the weak amber light from a single glow globe well down the corridor. Jason's eyes drifted closed, and opening them again cost him tremendous effort. His head thundered like the storm above. The corridor swirled around him, and darkness pressed in on his brain. I can't get my breath.
No?
I can't keep up, Vergère. I can't draw on the force like you do. I can't get strength.
Why not?
You know why not. Black fury ignited his heart, blood steaming in his head, spinning him to his feet. 2 strides put him above her. You did it to me. I am sick of your questions, sick of your training. He pulled her to her feet, then off her feet, holding her dangling above the floor so close that his teeth might as well have been clenched in her flesh. And most of all, he growled, low, murderous, I am sick of you. And Jason discovered that his hands were locked around her throat. His hands sprang open, and he took a step back, and another, until his back came hard against the sweating stone of the wall. Vergère's voice was warm as a kiss.
I told you. Here, the dark side is very, very strong.
The dark side? Jason lifted his head. His hands shook, so he clasped them together and pinned them between his knees.
Hi, Vergère. I'm sorry.
For what? I wanted to kill you. I almost did.
But you didn't.
All the Yuuzhan Vong can do is kill me. But
the dark side.
Why is it to be feared so?
He turned his face away. My grandfather was a lord of the Sith.
Anakin. Little Anakin. A lord of the Sith. Oh, could it not have been otherwise? What a tragedy. What a waste.
Jason stared at her in turn, his mouth hanging open. You say that like you knew him.
Knew of him more. Such promise. Do you know, I met him once, not 500 meters above where we now sit. He couldn't have been more than 12, perhaps 13 standard years old. He was so alive. He burned. 500 meters above us? What was this place? Do you not know? Has this been lost as well?
She touched the wall nearby, her fingers skittering through a complex pattern on a sweating rectangular slab, which slowly swung wide, opening a doorway into a gloom-filled chamber beyond.
This way.
The chamber threw back a dark resonance, as though she spoke beside a drum. Lost in wonder, Jason stepped past her into the darkness.
This was the Jedi Temple. This?
Awe squeezed his chest, and he floundered in the dark. He had to gasp harshly in order to speak.
You. You're a Jedi.
No, I am not. Nor am I Sith.
In the darkness, her voice seemed to come from everywhere at once. He turned, seeking her blindly. No more games, Vergere.
I tell you nothing but truth.
She sounded so close by that Jason reached for her in the dark.
I thought everything you tell me is a lie.
Yes, and the truth.
This time her voice came from behind him. He whirled, extending his hands, but found nothing he could grasp.
No games, he insisted.
There is nothing that is not a game. A serious game, to be sure. A permanent game. A lethal game. A game so grave that it can be well played only with joyous abandon.
But you said...
Yes, it has never been a game, and it always has. Either way, or both, you had better play to win.
How can I play if you won't even tell me the rules?
There are no rules, but the game does have a name.
She said from the opposite side of the room.
We are playing the same game we have been playing ever since Merkur. We are playing Who is Jason Solo?
If that's the game, he said, I can end it right now. I know who I am, Vergere.
Do you?
Yes, he said solidly into the darkness. I'm a Jedi.
A long, long silence in which he seemed to hear the entire room drawing a slow, slow breath.
Indeed,
she sounded sad.
Then the game is over.
Really? He said wearily. It is?
Yes, she sighed. And you lose.
The room burst to light. After so long in the dark, Jason felt like he was being jabbed in the eye with a piece of the sun. Slowly his eyes cleared. The room was larger than he had thought. And it was full of Yuuzhan Vong. He turned to Vergere. Beyond a ring of warriors, she stood companionably beside a medium-sized male who wore a long, loose-fitting robeskin of black. Jason had seen this male before. He had seen this male on Duro, with Leia's lightsaber behind his belt. He had seen this male on the world ship at Merkur. He knew this male's name, and he tried to say it. Tried to say. But before he could even open his mouth, a hot tidal surge of red billowed through him and washed away the world. Jason did not swim in the red tide. He floated,
drifting, spinning in the eddies, tumbling in the surf. The red tide ebbed, waves washing out, and he bobbed to the surface. The red tide drained from his head, leaving him gasping on the floor. His hands hurt. He looked at them, but he couldn't quite see them, or he couldn't quite make sense of what he saw. His eyes wouldn't quite focus. A circle in the middle of his palm, a disc about the size of a power cell, was blackened, cracked, oozing thick dark blood. Wisps of smoke coiled upward from the cracks.
How... how does it feel, Jason Solo?
The voice was thin, ragged and harsh, rasping, broken by coughs. The voice was familiar. The voice was Vergere's.
To once more touch the Force.
She lay crumpled on the floor a few meters away, just within a ragged archway lipped with jagged stone, as though some incomprehensibly powerful creature had trampled her as it crashed through the wall. Broken stone littered the floor.
Vergere!
He was at her side without knowing how he got there.
How? What happened?
A sickening conviction clotted in his guts.
Did I?
His voice trailed off. He remembered. Through a fever dream haze, red-soaked images leaked back into him. The room filled with Yuuzhan Vong warriors. Vergere standing beside Gnome Anor as though the two knew each other. As though they were co-workers. Comrades. Friends. Gnome Anor had said something to her and something to him, but betrayal had hammered any hope of meaning from his brain. He remembered a long gathering breath, inhaling a galaxy of hatred and rage. And he remembered channeling that whole galaxy of rage down his arms and hurling it at Vergere. And he remembered how good it had felt.
Vergere.
It had been so easy to hurt her. So simple. Tears spilled onto his cheeks.
I warned you, didn't I? I warned you. The dark side.
Don't make excuses.
Her voice was even fainter now, breathier, more ragged. The wall of rubble closed off most of the chamber. Tumbled hunks of duracrete fallen in a steep slope from uncountable floors above. The ceiling had collapsed, he remembered that much. Remember the roar, the pounding, the dust and flying splinters of stone. No. Wait. It hadn't collapsed. He had pulled it down. He remembered the wild joy of release as the power of the storm had roared into him and through him and became a mad vortex within the underground chamber, lifting stone and brick and chunks of duracrete to whirl and batter and slash the Yuuzhan Vong, pounding the warriors with pieces of the planet that had once been Jason's home. He had buried them alive, all of them, and he didn't care. The dark side called to him, a shadow worm whispering promises of ecstasy as it ate into his heart. He shook himself violently and lurched to his feet.
I have to get out of here.
Vergere's eyes seemed to clear then, and a hint of a smile curved her lips.
The dark side?
It's too strong for me here. I warned you. I warned you what could happen.
You see... But you do not see. Jason, why would the Jedi Council build its temple upon a nexus of the dark side?
Vergere, He shook his head helplessly. I don't have time for guessing games.
No guessing, she said. The answer is simple. They wouldn't.
He went very, very still.
What do you mean?
I can feel the dark side here. I touched the dark side and it touched me.
No. What you feel is the Force. This
is the shameful secret of the Jedi. There is no dark side.
Vergeer, I know better. What do you think just happened here?
The Force is one, Jason Solo. The Force is everything, and everything is the Force.
He couldn't let himself think it.
It's a lie.
No. Search your feelings. You know this to be true. The Force is one.
But he could feel the dark side. He was drowning in it.
What you call the dark side is the raw, unrestrained Force itself. You call the dark side what you find when you give yourself over wholly to the Force. To be a Jedi is to control your passion. But Jedi control limits your power. Greatness, true greatness of any kind, requires the surrender of control. Passion that is guided, not walled away. Leave your limits behind.
But the dark side.
If your surrender leads to slaughter, that is not because the Force has darkness in it. It is because you do.
He could feel that she was right.
The only dark side you need fear, Jason Solo, is the one in your own heart.
He threw himself past Vergeer into the hallway and fled, running. Home. The Solo apartments, not far from the ruined hulk of the Imperial Senate, still stood nearly intact. Home was where Jason had been heading ever since he'd woken up under the bridge. Where else did he have to go? He'd been half expecting, all these weeks, that reaching the place where he'd grown up would mean something. That he'd find some kind of safety there, some kind of answers. Is anything worse than finally reaching home and finding that you're still lost? He didn't even have the strength to cry. He fell into the black hole. Eons passed, or nanoseconds. Within the black hole, there was no difference between the two. Eternity within the dark. Information infell across the event horizon. A voice. What is real? What is illusion? Where is the line between truth and lie? Between right and wrong? It's a cold and lonely place, Jason Solo. The void of not knowing. Jason opened his eyes.
Vergeer, how did you find me?
She had settled, feline-like, upon the Solo dining table, arms and legs folded beneath her.
I do not share our master's prejudice against technology. Portions of the planetary database survive in memory cores. Discovering the home address of the former chief of state was no great trick.
But how did you know? How did you know I'd come home?
It is an instinct of all pack animals. The mortally wounded crawl back to their own dens to die.
Wounded?
With the greatest wound a Jedi can suffer. Freedom.
Another riddle. He had no strength for riddles.
I don't understand.
When you always know what is right, where is freedom? No one chooses the wrong, Jason Solo. Uncertainty sets you free.
Jason thought about that for a long time. Die at home, he murmured.
You're dead already. You have been these many months. You have nearly completed your passage through the lands of the dead. Now is time not for death, but for new life. You are healed, Jason Solo. Arise and walk.
Why should I?
Because you can, of course. Why else would anyone bother to get up?
I don't know. He closed his eyes again. It doesn't matter whether I get up or sit here until I starve. Nothing matters. Nothing means anything. Not even your brother's death? He shrugged listlessly. Life, death, all was one, one with the Force. He said, "The Force doesn't care."
Don't you care?
Whether I care doesn't matter either. Corners of her mouth tricked up and down.
Does it matter to you?
After a long silence, he sighed. Yes. Yes, it does. But so what? Sure, I care, but who am I? She gave a shrug so subtle it was almost a shiver.
That's always been the question, yes?
But you never have an answer.
I do have an answer, she said kindly. But it's my answer, not yours. You will find no truth in me.